Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. This year, we mark World Refugee Day with a sobering statistic. The number of forcibly displaced people globally has surpassed the 100 million mark, or more than 1% of the world's population. The theme of this year's World Refugee Day is the right to seek safety, and this includes safe passage and through open borders, not forcing anyone back if doing so would jeopardize their life or their freedom, and non-discriminatory, humane treatment. Joining us on the show tonight, we have Muhammad on the line. He is a refugee living in Malaysia, and because of this precarious status in the country, he has asked to remain anonymous. Muhammad, thank you for joining us today on the show. Can you begin by telling us a little bit about your story, about where you're from and how you came to be here in Malaysia?
Thank you very much for having me. So I came to Malaysia in 2012 because of the war in my home country. When the war started in Syria, my family and I were living very peacefully before that in the village. My siblings and I go to school. We had a very happy, normal life, just like anybody. And just in a blink of an eye, everything turned upside down. The war started. We seen bombs flying above our homes and hitting the villages next to us, and everything destroyed. I had since the war started until now, I've lost about 12 cousins because of the war. So the situation in my country at that time was traumatizing, and I'm very grateful that my family took action very quickly to remove us to a safer place, and that's why we came to Malaysia. And the reason we chose Malaysia is because at that time, before the war in 2006, there was a Malaysian family who used to live with us in Syria, and they were studying there, so we met them in Syria. We become very close. And they were struggling financially, so we took them to live with us. And then when they finished their studies, they came back to Malaysia. And when the war started in Syria, they invited us to come here. And that's when we chose to come to Malaysia.
Mohammed, this wonderful relationship that you have with the Malaysian family, that must be quite unique for most refugees. Most refugees probably land in a country where they have no connections. At least not intimate connections as you might had with those Malaysians. Did that shape your experience, or has it shaped your experience here in more positive ways than, say, other refugees that you know of?
I would say yes, to a certain extent. When we arrived in Malaysia, they welcomed us from the airport. We stayed at their house for a few weeks until we found a house for rent. And then they helped us to find a job for my father and so on and so forth. They took us around the country. They took us to their kampung in Terengganu. We tried all the local food. So of course they did help us adjust to the to Malaysia in the beginning. And I think we were very fortunate because of that. And that I always like to share this story to others, to tell them that when they were living with us in Syria, when they were struggling financially and they needed help at that time, we didn't look at their race, religion, or where they came from. We just helped because they needed help. And that should be how we as human beings should go forward. Like whenever we come across somebody who needs help, we should just help, because you never know what can happen to you tomorrow. And that's exactly what happened to us. If you ask us 12 years ago that one day we will become refugees and come to Malaysia and this same family that we helped will help us back, we will tell you that is impossible. But that is exactly what happened. So, that's how kindness works, and you help somebody in the next day or a few years later, this same exact person or God will send someone else to help you. So I would say we were very fortunate that we connected with this Malaysian family who, until this very day, we still visit each other. We still, during Raya, they have open house. We always go there and they come to our house and they try Syrian food. So we still have very good relationship.
Muhammad, help us understand the vulnerabilities of being a refugee living in Malaysia. Why did you opt to remain anonymous today? Are there concerns that you are worried about in revealing who you are?
Of course. We are not considered legal here. We're considered illegal. Pendatang asing tanpa izin pati. although it is not true, but according to the laws here, that's what we are. And for us to even just have basic human rights, that's illegal. And for me to even just speak up, be in a public platform like this is dangerous. I will be harassed publicly by cyberbullying. And, you know, there's a risk of me also, from the authorities. Back in 2014, I was arrested by the immigration and I was detained in the immigration detention center because I was working in a restaurant to help my family. I was only 14 years old at that time. So, of course, the risk is always there. And this is just one out of so many issues that refugees have to go through on a daily basis while living here in Malaysia.
Why have you not been able to, or your family been able to get refugee status? And does refugee status, I mean, that's conferred by UNHCR, is it the protection, a sufficient protection for refugees?
My family and I are recognized refugees. We already went through the refugee status determination and we were granted the refugee status here in Malaysia. The next step is, of course, resettlement or you know, going, voluntarily return if the situation in Syria becomes better. Resettlement only is very, very low, like only less than 1% chances each year of people who get resettled to a third country where they will have some rights. But, you know, in Malaysia, there are people who are even second and third generation of Rohingya refugees, for example, who are still waiting on resettlement. And my family, we have been here for 12 years and still waiting on resettlement. So in terms of the refugee status, my family and I, we do have it. But even if you are recognized by UNHCR as a refugee, you still do not have basic rights here in Malaysia. The laws in Malaysia will still consider you as pati, pendatang asing tanpa izin. And you'll be treated the same way as any other migrants who are undocumented.
Can I ask you how then the past couple of years with the pandemic and the lockdown has been for you? What have been the additional challenges that that you as a refugee have faced?
Well, even before the pandemic, refugees were struggling to make ends meet, working on a daily basis. Daily wages, earning 30 ringgit and less to put food on the table and feed their families and pay rent and healthcare and so on and so forth. So when the pandemic started, the situation just become worse for them. At least there were some programs offered by the government to help some Malaysian families, but there was none for refugees. And of course, you know, a lot of Malaysians themselves were struggling, but for refugees, it was even worse because even if they try to go out and do some work, they will still be in risk of getting detained and arrested. But at the same time, I also noticed there were a lot of positive responses from a lot of Malaysians that we know who have been, you know, who landed here. These are all NGOs and just the public who offered help and supported refugees through the pandemic, sending food aid, supporting people to get the vaccination and so on. So, of course, you know, while there are all these bad things that are happening, while there are this all the laws that are being imposed on refugees, there are many Malaysians who are very, very considerate and very kind towards these communities.
Mohammed, do younger refugees like yourself, you came as a very young man, are younger refugees more likely to adapt and survive this experience than, say, older people? Where do you see, you know, the challenges there for the individual?
I would say for adults and children, it's a different experience. Like, for example, my parents, until now, they cannot speak Bahasa Melayu, whereas me and my siblings were all fluent in Malay. And I think having mastered the Malay language, it has made our lives a bit slightly easier to communicate with the locals here, to even communicate with the authorities whenever we have issues with authorities, to even integrate with local communities. Whereas for adults refugees, for example, like my parents or any other adult refugees that I've met, it's a bit hard for them to learn a new language, learn a new culture, for example, adapt suddenly. Like, you know, imagine they have lived a very happy life back home and, you know, they had jobs, they had houses. Like my father had a very good paid job and we had our own house, a bungalow house. We had our own farm. But in just a blink of an eye, everything is gone. So, you know, for our parents to quickly move and change that and adapt to a new life where they have to work on daily wages and make ends meet and then having to depend on their children for survival as well. It's very difficult for them. Whereas for children, I think it is a bit slightly easier. But however, you know, of course, then comes all the issues that children face, like access to education. In Malaysia, they're not allowed to enroll in government schools. So NGOs and UNSHAR have set up community learning centers. But, you know, education is not of a good quality. The resources are very limited. And most of these CLCs are often overcrowded and underfunded. So, and of course, comes in the mental health issues that they struggle with. We have seen few cases of youth who committed suicide in the past few years because of the situation that they are going through.
Mohammed, I'm sure it's taken a lot of courage for you to come on the show today and for you to speak your truth, and we appreciate that. I do want to ask you what your personal hopes are. What is it that you would like to see in this lifetime, would like to see change for your future? And also, what would you like our audience tonight to understand about the life of a refugee here in Malaysia?
Whenever someone asks me about my hopes, I'm always very optimistic and I think very big. But sometimes it's the little things, as simple as just accepting us and looking at us just like how you'd look at any other human being. Like, why does a piece of paper or a piece of document have to determine the value that I have as a human being? That is the question I always ask myself. Why does a piece of paper, a piece of card, have to determine what am I worth of, and am I deserving of human rights? So I think the basic thing for me that I always hope for is for people to be more accepting and more tolerant and more open-minded towards accepting new people in their culture and in their society. And you know, I, as a refugee who have lived here, I am forever grateful for Malaysia, because like, if I didn't come here, I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't have learned English and Malay. I wouldn't have learned all those skills. So, you know, I will forever remember Malaysia, and wherever I go, I'll always bring Malaysia's name high up, and, you know, be proud to be someone who lived in Malaysia and call Malaysia a second home.
Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Mohammed, a refugee from Syria, now living in Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. June 20th marks World Refugee Day, which is an occasion to build empathy and understanding for the plight of refugees and to recognize their resilience in rebuilding their lives. This year, the focus is on the right to seek safety, that every person on this planet has a right to seek safety, whoever they are, wherever they come from, and wherever, whenever they are forced to flee. So joining us on the show now, we have Tam Hui Ying. She is the Executive Director of Asylum Access Malaysia. Hui Ying, can we begin this with this year's theme for World Refugee Day, the basic right to seek safety? I wonder what you think, whether this applies to Malaysia, whether we uphold this right, or where we might improve in this respect.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you so much for having me here and for commemorating such an important day. So on the right to seek safety, I think there's just a few things to kind of unpack there. So I think maybe starting with the should we, like, you know, so is this a right that Malaysia should be upholding? So I think oftentimes we hear, oh, well, we are not signatories to the 1951 Convention. And so, you know, all the rights under there or rights that apply to refugees do not apply to Malaysia. So I just want to start off by saying that is untrue. You know, we are, you know, signatories to human rights, other human rights conventions that do safeguard this, right? This right to safety. I mean, in particular, I wanted to sort of highlight the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that very specifically sort of mentions, you know, right to seek asylum. Also just to say that, you know, Malaysia is part of that by virtue of being just a member of the UN, and also, you know, the fact that we are currently a member of the Human Rights, you know, Council of the UN. I think all of these kind of, I think it's an imperative, you know, for us to ensure that we abide by all these rights that are enshrined in these, you know, international human rights treaties. As to your sort of question about, you know, are we doing it? So I think we just need to sort of look at how we've been, you know, whether we've been applying it, right? So take, for example, the most, I think the most, like the clearest example of where this right to safety shows itself is when we're talking about boat arrivals, right? Refugees arriving on our shore. And in that instance, we've seen in the past few years, you know, sort of boat pushbacks or detention of people who have been allowed to disembark. And all of that is in violation of, you know, the right to seek asylum. And so, yeah, I would say that, like, you know, our track record in terms of, you know, upholding this right isn't too stellar, that's for sure.
Right. And if we were to zoom out and take a broader view, I mean, you heard Mohammed's very moving account of his experience, his lived reality as a refugee here in Malaysia. What struck you the most about what he was saying, Huiying? As someone who works with the refugee community, with asylum seekers, did any of that come as a surprise to you? Did it already confirm what you had already heard from other refugees and asylum seekers?
Yeah, I don't think, unfortunately, nothing that was said actually came as a surprise to me in terms of these experiences as a refugee in Malaysia. I think the highlight sort of in particular, one of the things that he mentioned about documentation, right? And just sort of like bring us back to sort of the treatment of refugees in Malaysia. So I think, you know, just the fact that we don't have any legislative or, you know, administrative framework to recognize and govern the rights of refugees, I think that's a very important point to sort of emphasize. Because what this means is that this lack of recognition and protection really like raises significant challenges for the lives of refugees in Malaysia, right? And it sort of permeates every aspect of their lives. So we can talk about, you know, starting from the most basic, lack of freedom of movement, the fact that you are treated as a quote-unquote illegal immigrant means that, you know, you anytime you sort of step out, there's always the threat of arrest and detention. And, you know, I just wanted to sort of highlight that as of 11th of October, 2021, according to government statistics, there are around 1,000, more than 1,400 children in detention across Malaysia. So, you know, this is something that's quite concerning. I mean, in terms of the, you know, the sort of arrest and detention of refugees. Then we talk about, you know, education. So just, you know, the lack of access to formal or quality education for refugee children. Then we talk about healthcare, right? The fact that they do not have status in Malaysia means that they are unable to access safe, affordable and quality healthcare. And in addition to which, you know, there is this threat of arrest and detention when you're sort of like trying to get access to healthcare as well. Then I think one other thing as well, which is quite an important aspect of a person's life, is livelihood, right? The right to work. And so again, you know, here as you know, treated as undocumented persons, you know, you don't have access to formalized, safe and, you know, sustainable work. And so most refugees have to work. I mean, it's a matter of survival, right? And so they often work in conditions that are, you know, what we call the 3Ds, dirty, difficult, and dangerous, and are often subjected to quite a lot of exploitation. So I think that, you know, just sort of stemming from the lack of documentation and just how this lack of protection and recognition sort of permeates every aspect of their lives. And
right, Huiying, I just want to say that, you know, it seems that we come back to this every year. And every time we talk about refugees or in the media, it's about whether we should this year confer the rights to something as simple as a right to make a living, knowing the realities, as you put out, the exploitation that comes from their vulnerabilities caused by their status. But we never seem to move. And I'm wondering if this is a problem of a political establishment that on one hand will speak of compassion for any number of refugees around the world, but can't seem to find that same compassion for what is happening here, for what has happened to the people who they have allowed to live here. And as an activist, you must find this galling.
Yes, absolutely. You know, as you mentioned, like, this is something that's been going on for like years, right? Decades. And we keep going back to, we keep making excuses about how, oh, we haven't ratified this. And, you know, as I mentioned, it's not about ratification. We have laws that can provide protection for refugees that you just need to implement properly. We have, you know, laws that you can amend to, domestic laws that you can amend that you can, that can incorporate sort of refugee protections, right? So really, it boils down to a question of political will, right? Like, are you willing to make, are you willing to sort of, make these, realize these commitments that you have made in the international field, right? And I think that that's, I think that's a very important sort of question to ask. It's like, why do you, how can you say one thing in the international sort of arena, but then not practice it in Malaysia, right? Like, call out the disconnect and call out the, hypocrisy, right?
Can I ask you about public buy-in? I mean, I'm just wondering, because it feels as though, again, as Sharad said, when we speak about this every year, but it feels that almost every year, the rhetoric around migrants and refugees tend to become even more polarized. Do you think that public attitudes are shifting, and what might make a more compelling argument if the rights-based argument doesn't seem to be landing with public?
Yeah, so I would sort of look at it as like kind of like, what are the biggest challenges facing us, right? And I sort of summarized it into three words. So discrimination, prejudice, and ignorance, which is all sort of, which sort of goes to that sort of public sentiment that you were sort of alluding to, right? Yeah. And I think that it's sort of really important to address that. So, and I think that we need to also sort of understand where that is stemming from, right? Where is this discrimination, prejudice coming from? And I think that it's sort of linked to that ignorance, right? Not understanding why refugees are here, what they do here, and how they survive. And there's a lot of misinformation that's been spreading around refugees, which I think needs to be addressed, right? So I think really addressing those root causes is really important here. And I'm really sorry, I missed the second part of your question.
Well, it was really to do with the fact that how do we get the public narrative to shift? How do we get, again, from looking at refugees as a cost, as a threat, to flip the narrative and focus on everything that a refugee, refugees and migration brings to the country, the skills and the knowledge and the innovation. How do we get that narrative to flip?
So I think that that is a question that I think a lot of us within the set of refugee rights field is really trying, really trying to figure out. But to me, I really think that it goes back to one, sort of addressing the ignorance and the misinformation, two, really not stoking those negative sentiments, right? I think having more, really sort of fight, pushing back against the negative narratives that are sort of peddled by different parties. And I think the third thing goes back to, I think, common humanity, sort of recognizing that refugees are humans, right, with rights, and we're all the same, and that we all face discrimination in many ways as well, right, as Malaysians. And it's understanding that there that we should be standing together in solidarity as opposed to pitting one against the other. I think that, like, it's just going back to that, like, going back to like compassion and like common humanity, like which sounds very idealistic, I take it, but I do genuinely feel that, you know, that's what we need to go back to. We've somehow, I feel, forgotten, especially in the past 2 years with pandemic and, you know, all of the things that plague us in our daily lives. Sometimes I think it's you know, you lose sight of that.
Sight of that, yes. Huiying, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Tham Huiying, therefore, the Executive Director of Asylum Access Malaysia. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.